Hey, it's Naz. This is the Gendernaut, and quickly, for those of you listening who are in or near London, here are some dates for your diaries. There are two events coming up by GenderSwap, the queer community clothing exchange. The first one is on Thursday, 14th September at the Come As You Are Festival in Camden, and the next one is on Sunday, 17th September at The Glory. And the London Queer Fashion Show is on Wednesday, 20th September at Hackney Showroom. You can find more details about all these in the written information for this episode. We're going to be speaking to people from both GenderSwap and the London Queer Fashion Show on this week's episode. Here it goes.
The challenge was, okay, I feel like a woman, I was born a woman, but how do I still remain feminine and womanly to the world when to society and most people I look like a 12-year-old boy?
We're exploring if clothing shapes gender identity on this episode of The Gendernaut, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm your host. My name is Nastran Tavakolifar, but it's cool. Call me Naz. And we're trying to figure out gender roles for our modern era. This episode is about clothing. We want to explore the link between clothing and gender identity.
When I was dating someone, I was a bit like, I just don't know. I want to wear boxers, but I also want to put on red lipstick and I can't figure it out. And they were like, well, I've always just seen you as kind of genderless. Like, does it matter? You can mix the two. I mean, it doesn't matter. And I kind of had this sort of epiphany.
We talked to two guests about whether the clothes they choose to wear has influenced their gender identity and the whole concept of gender neutral clothing and their experiences with dressing in a way that doesn't traditionally fit with how they were born.
I get misgendered constantly. Mm-hmm. I think in my early 20s, it was really upsetting and hard for me because I really was like, I'm a female, hello, like why can't women also look like this?
Okay, so for those of you who've heard this podcast before, you'll know that this is the part where I usually do some long monologue or rant or get really opinionated, often while slagging off other opinionated people for the very fact that they are opinionated. You know, pot, kettle, black. Oh yes. But this episode is a bit different. Sometimes on the Gendernaut, we explore issues where I'll have a strong opinion or a lot of experience, and we want to have some kind of solution of sorts to a problem of sorts. And sometimes we'll just kick back and be really open and just try to learn more and take it from there. This episode is one of those. Right, so gender-neutral clothing is pretty topical in the UK right now, and the whole discussion about clothing and gender is being discussed with increasing frequency in a lot of countries, and also on the internet. Going back to the UK, over the past week alone, there have been a few news stories about gender-neutral clothing. The department store John Lewis has decided that their own brand of children's clothing will be gender-neutral. That means that their own brand children's clothes will not be divided by gender in their stores. I was also reading about a secondary school in Lewes, in England, which has decided to make its school uniform gender neutral, so girls are no longer required to wear skirts, and in fact, they're required to wear trousers, which you could argue is an issue in itself, but we'll leave that for now. The school says this is in response to students asking why girls and boys have to dress differently, and it's also to make transgender students feel included. And these are just some of the stories that I've stumbled upon through generally reading the news over the past week. Now, on this episode of The Gendernaut, we'll be speaking to two guests about the way they dress and what impact it's had on their own gender identity. Both our guests were born female and dress in a way that is not, quote, traditionally feminine, end quote. One of our guests identifies as female and the other identifies as non-binary. Now, clothing is such a powerful external representation of our identities, and in particular, our gender identity, and it starts from such a young age. Even babies are often assigned clothing which is in a color that's meant to correspond with the sex of their birth, the classic colors of blue and pink. And this gendered clothing sort of continues from there. Our first guest is Laura Canaplu. Laura is the producer of the London Queer Fashion Show, which is on 20th September. This is a fashion show for queer and gender non-conforming people, and it aims to show how fashion can allow for a pure expression of identity. It's about pure expression outside the confines of gender expectations from society. Designers showing their work include Thomas Thomas, which is all about androgynous tailoring. Designer SJ is said to have fallen in love with men's vintage suits when she was 18, and Thomas Thomas tailors for a wide variety of body types. There's also Ben Copperwheat, who uses interesting prints, including screen prints, and has designed fabric for Calvin Klein, among others, as well as launching his own clothing line. There are more details about the London Queer Fashion Show in the written information for this episode, so check that out. Now back to Laura. She grew up in New York State. She was born female and also identifies as female. She describes herself as dressing in a more traditionally masculine way. When co-producer Katie and I went to record with her, she was wearing olive-coloured khaki-style trousers and a black t-shirt, her hair short and close-cut, sort of like the high-end tight style, but a bit more unique. Laura told us more about her experiences with the way she dresses, how people have reacted to that, and her gender identity.
The challenge was, okay, I feel like a woman, I was born a woman, but how do I still remain feminine and womanly to the world when, to society and most people, I look like a 12-year-old boy? So that's kind of, that was a really big struggle for me, because it's like, I want to assert my femininity, but to the world, feminine means one thing. It's very black and white.
You think it's very tied into sort of your visual representation?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Okay. My gender identity is, I do identify as a cis female, but I think when it comes to expression, I'm expressing myself in a more masculine way. So it could be, you know, a term like masculine of center, which is MOC, BOI, boy, tomboy, androgynous, you know, kind of fitting outside of a very black and white realm. And I kind of, you know, I'm on a spectrum of expression in the way that I wear clothes or even style my hair. I think the hair thing is really what kind of gets people, because it's like, oh, well, Kristen Stewart has like, well, she doesn't now, but like has long hair and wears like boys' clothing or, you know, men's clothing. But like the minute someone like cuts their hair off, like you see it even like when celebrities do it, it's like massive for people. Mm-hmm. Like I remember reading an interview with Michelle Williams. I think she did an interview with The Times or, you know, something a little bit more progressive. And she was just like, they asked, like, do men or people look at you differently? And she was like, yeah, people don't hold the door for me as much as they used to. You know, bank tellers aren't as friendly, or like kind of daily interactions started to change the minute she cut her hair into this like little pixie cut.
I mean, are there examples of times when people have sort of questioned your gender or something because of how you dress?
I get misgendered constantly. Mm-hmm. I think in my early 20s, it was really upsetting and hard for me, because I really was like, I'm a female, hello, like why can't women also look like this? Like I was just kind of in this very like angsty, angry place where I think gender also wasn't talked about a lot in the early to mid 2000s. Like there weren't a lot of conversations. I didn't know any genderqueer people. I didn't know a lot of people who dressed the way that I did, and I still identified as female. I think that was a really big thing. Like I had a core group of lesbian identified friends who were all female, cis female, but I was like the only one in the group who like kind of looked boyish, and like the only representation we had was like Shane on the L Word, and I was like, well, I don't want to be associated with a character on the show who's like a shithead. Like that's not really what I want. Like, great, the character itself dresses very androgynously in the show and outside of the show, but like I don't see anyone on a regular basis that, you know, has short hair and, you know, shops in the men's section of a clothing store. All the people I was hanging out with, you know, had long hair and, you know, was, you know, makeup, and that's fine. Like that's how they wanted to present themselves, and they were a fun group of people, but it really, you know, I was kind of outnumbered. You know, like we'd roll up into the club and it'd be like all of them, and then it would just be like me, and I was like, cool, I look like your guys. It was like baby brother.
But sometimes I wonder if there are times when that was handy, like you can pass as something different.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think, you know, misgendering, like I said, was really kind of difficult for me in my early 20s, where I would get really angry at someone at like Chipotle for being like, sir, what do you want, brown or white rice? And I was like, well, like in my mind I was just like, you know, what the hell? Like, how do you not know this? And then now it's, sometimes I just fuck around with people. I'm like, you know, like, I can't, you know, make my voice go deeper. But it just stopped being, because it's like, you know what, I'm never going to see this person again. Mm-hmm. I think that's when it's like, you know, it's an honest mistake. They're not trying to be mean or, you know, nasty to me. They're just literally trying to get my order, you know, like at a coffee shop or a Chipotle. But I've had interactions where in the bathroom it can get really uncomfortable. I once had a man come up to me. I was at like a store right by, I got my master's in social work, and I was just like picking up a snack, and just out of nowhere, like looking at Oreos or like whatever I was, you know, going to buy, this man just comes up to me and said, "Are you a girl or a boy?" And I just was like, why does that matter? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm buying a snack, like, in what, you know? And it was just so kind of funny that he asked me that as I'm like a social work student getting my master's degree and like focusing on like gender and sexuality and identity and like the LGBTQ community. I was like, okay, if you want to have this conversation, like, I can school you right now about like why this doesn't matter. And like, I was like, why does this matter? You know, why would you ask someone that question? He just like did not want to have that conversation. And I was like, well, maybe you shouldn't ask people that question. Like, that's not really something that you should just go around asking people. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to have a conversation about like the difference between gender identity and sexual orientation, like, I'm happy to like sit down across the way and like have a coffee with you about what that means. But you probably shouldn't go up to someone in a supermarket and just ask them what their gender is. Mm-hmm. I think when I was younger, I was comfortable kind of dressing more masculine or, you know, wearing boyish clothes or shopping in the boys section. But once I got to high school, 14, 15, 16, I felt so much pressure to be more feminine and have my hair long and fit in. And
would people make comments?
A lot of people made comments in middle school. Middle school was really, really rough for me. So that was 6th, 7th, and 8th grade in the States. And
how old would you be?
So that was, I was 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of that crucial, like,
sensitive, fragile
age.
Oh
my God, just like mean girl, you know, it was rough. I had also come from being in a private school setting to going in a public school setting, which was massive for me because my private school was very nurturing and very small. And then going to a setting where there was, you know, over 3,000 prepubescent boys and girls running around, it was rough. A lot of bullying and name calling me a dyke. When I wasn't even sure of what my sexuality was at that point, I just was like, yeah, I like to wear, you know, the clothes my brothers wear and, you know, shop in the boys section of PacSun, you know, like whatever was cool then, that's what I was wearing. And keep my hair short or so. I didn't really start conforming and feeling the need to do that until I hit high school, which was 14, 15, 16, 17, 18.
And then did you, like, start dressing differently?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew my hair out, started wearing, like, tighter, more form-fitting clothes. I think when Britney Spears first came out, I idolized her a lot as a pop star and kind of just, like, emulated that, you know, kind of midriff-bearing, early 2000s look of like midriff bearing plus like really low cut jeans. Like, it just was a phenomenal time in fashion history. Juicy couture, a lot of that. I had like blonde, like streaky highlights in my hair. I wore makeup, you know, eye makeup, eyeshadow, mascara. I straightened my hair. It was just putting on kind of a show in a way. I was like, I think that's why I was okay with it. I was like, okay, well, this is just a character that I can really kind of play, and that's great. Like, I'm really good at this, and I can go and wear these clothes and physically be okay in them. And, you know, even though I think deep down I was just like, this is not how I want to present myself, this is not who I am, and this doesn't really show who I am on the inside. It's just kind of this like artificial relationship that I'm putting out there so other people can feel comfortable. I think that's really what it was. It was like, okay, how can I make everyone else feel comfortable even though I'm compromising my own kind of feeling comfortable in my own skin?
And where was home?
Home was an hour north of New York City in the suburbs, in a county called Rockland County.
So I lived in New York for just a year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is a New York thing or a US thing. I was quite struck by how things seemed a lot more gendered. Maybe put it this way, I noticed masculinity a lot more in that I felt like, for example, like men were definitely a lot more overtly masculine than here. That was really noticeable to me.
Really?
Maybe I noticed women's femininity less, but again, this is just comparing London and New York.
Yeah, of course.
I felt I don't know if it's because I'm from London and maybe I'm used to it. So when you're an outsider,
right,
sometimes things are different. But I felt like New York felt very hyper-masculine to me, and it just felt more gendered. I don't know if it's like
I totally understand that, and I think that's from I think that's just the U.S. in general, and I associate that with the way the kind of economic and like corporate world works in the U.S. and the way the, you know, we're expected to work, I think.
Because I was going to say, I saw it as very much tied into capitalism.
Yes.
As well.
100% capitalism and this kind of assertive, over-aggressive male culture in a very corporate capitalistic setting.
Yeah.
So competitive, so bro-y, just, you know, a world that I ran away from so quickly when I was in it very briefly because it's so gendered.
Mm-hmm. I work. You mean the corporate world?
Corporate world.
Okay.
In the United States, New York specifically. I had an experience where I worked at a nonprofit in Philadelphia where I had a manager who was very difficult from day one, just in general. It wasn't about the way I looked. She just was a very difficult person. About 3 months in, she took me into her office and said she needed to have a conversation with me about the way I dressed. And at this time, I was in my mid-20s. I was 3 months in. I was feeling comfortable wearing just kind of... And it was a nonprofit, which means, you know, people, it's a little bit more casual. It's not like business attire, kind of just wear something like I'm wearing today, but maybe with a button-down. So it would just be like, these are from The Gap. They're like khaki trousers. I would wear like Sperry topside or boat shoes and yeah, like a button down from like Uniqlo or J. Crew when I had the money to shop at J. Crew. tucked in, belt, you know, still very crisp and appropriate. And this woman took me into her office and said, you know, we need to talk about the way you dress. And I said, okay, you know, like I'm the point person when everyone walks into the office. Do you need me to wear some sort of blazer or suit jacket or, you know, wear like a just maybe only white button downs, like so it's a little bit more crisp and clean.
Wait, were you the person who was mostly dealing with the public? Like who
they'd
see?
Yeah, but like no one really came in the office, so it was very rare that people would come for like a meeting. Mm-hmm. But the vibe of the office was, you know, casual. It wasn't, mm-hmm. and there wasn't even a dress code in the HR handbook. Like it didn't say like, can wear this, can't wear that, don't, you know, like there was nothing. So, you know, she said, we need to talk about this. I gave her suggestions. I gave her an opportunity to, you know, really.
But we need to talk about what? What
did the way you dress or how you're dressing at work.
And what did she say?
She didn't say anything specifically. Like I could see her kind of like the gears grinding and like what she was going to say and what she was thinking.
So she was like tiptoeing around.
Exactly. Okay. So I said, you know, to kind of get, like, I was like, is she really going to do this? Like, is she going to do this right now? So I'm like, okay, like do I need to be a little bit more professional since I'm the one sitting out in front? Like what are you really saying here? Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't know. Just look around at all the other women in the office.
Okay.
So it was like summertime. A lot of the women were wearing like sundresses and strappy sandals and, you know, whatever felt comfortable for them. You know, that's what they wanted to wear. This place was, you know, a nonprofit helping people. We should all feel comfortable in the way we dress because we're doing something for a community and we should feel proud of ourselves for doing that. And I said, you know, that's just not how I present myself. And I don't remember how that conversation ended, but the next day I knew I had to say something. So I went into her office, I shut the door and she was like, uh-oh. And I was like, yeah. So I really want to clear the air and just tell you that you can't tell me that I can't wear the clothes that I'm wearing and allow Alfred, who's a male identified person, that he can wear basically the same outfit as me. I said, that's sexist. I said, it could possibly be illegal in the state of Pennsylvania, which it probably isn't because Pennsylvania laws are crazy. But you can get fired for being LGBT still in the state of Pennsylvania, which is insane. But I said, you know, this is just blatant sexism, and you can't do that to me. And I just, again, see the gears grinding in her head and this kind of defensive mode. And, you know, I'm just explaining to her why it's not okay. And being very, and like, I don't know how I had so much adrenaline. I just was as calm as possibly could, you know, I could be. And the conversation basically just ended with her being like, okay, well, then let's just forget we ever had that conversation yesterday. And then, like, a slight pause and was like...
Sounds pretty awkward.
Yeah, then, like, so awkward. And then, like, a slight pause and her just staring at me and being like, and please don't hire a lawyer.
Oh.
So okay. She knew. Like, she knew that that was...
Totally unreasonable.
Yeah, and... like, the same as something like a sexual harassment or, mm-hmm. you know, it's blatant sexism in a work setting.
It's funny because I grew up in London, which is a cosmopolitan metropolis, and KD, our co-producer, is from Berkeley in California, which is probably one of the most progressive places on Earth. For KD and I, Laura just looked super cool. There was nothing about her that made us stop and question anything, so hearing these experiences was really strange. But even more that I personally couldn't see why there would be any sort of issue with how she dresses. In the office, in her personal life, at school, which made the reactions she'd gotten even more baffling to me. What was most interesting is that it appeared that the people who had a problem with her clothing were people who, well, maybe this sounds a bit judgmental, but I wonder if it's people who are less comfortable with themselves and with who they are. There's that well-known adage in psychology that we judge in others that which we judge in ourselves. I was sensing a hint of that from the reactions she was getting. Now, like you heard, Laura identifies as a woman, and something struck me after speaking to her. When I was a teenager, I used to dress rather tomboyish. I would have definitely classed myself as a tomboy. And I saw that as a way of rebelling against how a girl should look. And it went one step further and rebelled against how a girl should behave. I can think of other girls like this too. In fact, I've often wondered about the tomboy thing, as it's often a particular type of girl, usually smart and feisty, and a girl who wants to prove that she is independent and not reliant on male approval, and that she is her own person who will not be boxed in. I feel like for me, dressing in a way that wasn't traditionally feminine allowed some way of defining femininity for myself. Though, note that I still had long and wavy hair, and at some point I discovered eyeliner, which then changed the look entirely. But anyhow, it was less about fitting into what others said was feminine, and rather trying to be my own person. I, for one, felt that by dressing a bit tomboyish, I was freer to define the sort of woman I wanted to be, away from other people's expectations. Now, I am in no way comparing my experience to Laura's, but she really got me thinking about all that, and we'll come back to this a little later. Next up is Santina Sorrenti. She runs a community queer clothing swap called Gender Swap. These are events where anyone can bring their old clothes and swap them for something that's more likely to fit in with their gender identity. There are some gender swap events happening this week in London. Details are in the written notes for this episode. Santina grew up in Vancouver in Canada and was born female and identifies as non-binary, although she's okay with us calling her she. When KD and I met with her, she was wearing a black t-shirt and black shorts, had short hair swept to the side, and was wearing makeup. Like Laura, she just looked really cool and someone with a unique style of her own. Santina tells us about the interplay between her gender identity and experiments with clothes.
Last weekend I was out and some guy came up to me and was like, are you one of those gender fluid people now? Are you one of those gender fluid kind of people? And I thought that was really, that was cool. Like, I actually appreciated that question because I thought, well, obviously the way I'm dressing then is emanating this kind of presence that I want anyways. Yeah.
And also that he knew what that was.
Yeah, exactly. Which is kinda cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think that the question I get asked a lot is, oh, you know, you like to be more androgynous, but you wear makeup. and or your face is quite feminine, you wear quite feminine makeup, but makeup also doesn't have a gender, and makeup also falls into obviously like aesthetics and dress.
You identify as non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I can call you she?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I wanted to know a little bit about the way you dress and your journey in identifying as non-binary. Mm-hmm. Was there an overlap between the two?
Yeah, I mean, my journey to realizing I am non-binary is the fact that I always had this struggle between, picking out clothes from a younger age, you know? I was almost scared to look too masculine, quote unquote, or feminine, or I felt like I really needed to fit to one category or the other. As I went on, I kind of had some frustrations, and when I was dating someone, I was a bit like, I just don't know. Like, I want to wear boxers, but I also want to put on red lipstick, and I can't figure it out. And they were like, well, I've always just seen you as kind of genderless. Like, does it matter? You can mix the two. I mean, it doesn't matter. And I kind of had this sort of epiphany. And from then on, I felt it easier to just acquire or buy clothes or find clothes that I felt comfortable in without having it, you know, pertain to a specific gender. I went from actually being quite like hyper feminine in my dress into really sort of tomboyish, and then kind of leveling out somewhere in the middle. So
when you say hyper feminine, what's the description? And what age were you at this time?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think it would start in high school. So, I mean, I was quite feminine going into high school, and then around 16, I got really into the Avril Lavigne phase and started wearing the ties and the sweater vests, and then it slowly kind of, you know, morphed into baggy jeans and skate shoes, and then I graduated, became a makeup artist, and then I started being more feminine, tons of makeup, lots of time, like heels or whatever you deem as feminine. I was a cheerleader, but I was always kind of, and then I started going back towards sort of tomboy, if you want to call it that, dress, and just exploring different modes of dress, shopping in different sections, even though I don't think there should be different sections, but and then it just kind of leveled out to whatever I am now, and realizing I don't really feel like I'm any particular gender, and I also don't feel like my clothes need to have any particular gender as well. So
did these changes in like dressing really feminine and then dressing really masculine and all the in between and stuff, did that go hand in hand with your sort of journey with your gender identity?
Definitely.
Did one come before the other, or is it kind of hard to try and distinguish because maybe they kind of melded seamlessly or something?
Yeah, it's hard to distinguish because when I think of myself as a young kid, very 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 young, I always loved rocking like big wide leg jeans and, you know, kind of alternative fashions to what other kids were wearing. And then it got to a phase where my mom was kind of like, oh, you should wear this, you should wear that. And then...
But what was she suggesting?
Oh, she was... she was suggesting dresses and why don't I pull my hair back and keep my hair long? Why did you cut your hair? You know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So... still quite stereotypical or traditional, I should say, like social or gendered clothing. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's interesting when you said about dressing tomboy, because I wonder if that's also a phase with sort of women trying to assert their independence or something. Because I feel like when I was a teenager, and I've kind of always felt like a woman, but I feel like I went through quite a tomboyish way of dressing, as did sort of other women I can think of who had this really big drive to be like, oh, I'm not going to be in a box of what a woman should be. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, I don't know, I find that quite interesting in itself.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting that we obviously choose different clothing items or certain outfits because we want to be perceived a certain way. If we're in a professional environment, you know, we want to wear a suit, we want to be taken seriously. If I'm at a pub or a bar where there's like a lot of drunk people and I don't want to necessarily have certain attention, I may dress in a certain way that's more downplayed or not so
downplaying. What the
just like colors or just style, like I'll just wear maybe something more basic or something that's less vibrant or that stands out. I think that even just what we choose, it goes beyond just, you know, it doesn't relate just to gender identity and how we want to be perceived in our own skin, but also what kind of attitude or mood or like role we want to assert. So,
do you ever dress very like traditionally feminine these days?
Yeah, once in a while, yeah. I'll whip out like a really tight short dress at like a family reunion, like I did one time, and I just like felt really good. But I mean, yeah, I do that because just like gender is, I think clothing is also quite fluid and always changing. It's very, there's no fixed way of presentation.
Do you ever feel like you have to dress more stereotypically feminine though in certain situations?
In certain situations, I wouldn't necessarily, the first thought that comes to mind wouldn't be necessarily feminine, but maybe less alternative. Like I will take out my piercings or I'll put my hair back or wear a little bit more makeup. I guess that could be perceived as feminine. Yeah, I definitely do.
But do you feel like in those settings you have to dress like that for some reason? Is there a pressure?
Yeah, sometimes there is a pressure, you know, just maybe being judged or maybe not coming across as like maybe serious or professional enough, I guess, would be like the one thing that I think of a lot. Or maybe people just being confused and therefore maybe not wanting, let's say, in an interview to hire me if they don't really understand me or where I stand, or they can't really identify me in their own sort of way of doing so. So I definitely feel pressure to conform in certain situations, definitely.
Is that more so that they can look beyond that and like listen to what you have to say, or see like, so they're not kind of distracted by trying to put together how you dress and how you look?
Definitely, yeah. That is just more straightforward and they can hear what I have to say beyond judging me based on my appearance. But I would have to say mostly in just professional as in job interviews and things like that. I think that as I'm growing and getting older, I'm not feeling as much pressure. I feel more a sense of like, yeah, this is me, this is how I dress, this is, you know.
What do you do work-wise?
Mostly I'm working on Gender Swap, which mm-hmm. is a project that I'm running, and it supports non-binary, trans, and gender non-conforming people to access clothes in a safe space. So what I do is I organize community clothing swaps, and anybody, yeah, from the LGBTQ plus community can come down and trade clothes. So it's just creating more safe spaces for gender variant people to feel like they can express who they are. And I think this is so important because I think we're quite limited in these spaces, especially in like mainstream areas like high streets and the main Oxford Street or main shopping centers. I think that there's quite a lot of barriers that gender non-conforming people can face. I organize community clothing swaps, and people can bring down their old clothes that they no longer identify with, and they can swap for clothes that they do.
So your event on the 17th of September is called Gender Forever, but you've got brackets around the END.
Yeah.
So it's like end gender.
Yeah, same with the gender swap name. It also has the same brackets around end, and that's more of an emphasis on end gender norms and sort of like gender categories and stereotypes. Yeah, that's the main message. I think that for those who ask the question, you know, oh, but what about people who feel really strongly about their own gender identity and they adhere closely to a specific gender norm, that's okay and that's accepted. I think this is more a mission, the whole project is a mission to create awareness around the fact that there are more than just two genders. And even with those two genders, for people who see that there are only two, that there's room for self-exploration and self-transformation within those gender categories. It's more of just celebrating a way to express your gender in any which way that you feel you want to. So it's all about ending gender norms.
Why should clothes not be gendered?
I mean, I think clothing shouldn't be gendered because it boxes people up and it limits people to being able to express themselves how they want to express. I mean, if a guy is feeling really creative or feeling like, yeah, I want to wear a dress today, but to find themselves in a women's section, women's only section, not that it's called women's only, but it's implied, you know, a girl's section in a store with the wrong cuts, with sizes that don't suit a particularly you know, masculine figure. It's so limiting, and it's also can be quite oppressive, because just by having these categories, you're saying already men should dress a certain way, women should dress a certain way, those are your sections, and, you know, go do your thing. So I think that if we just let those barriers down and got rid of those sections, had different styles, colors, different cuts, different shapes that suit all body types, and was able to change the language surrounding clothing, I think that it would just create a more freer and open society. I mean, it's quite utopian, but I think that it's also quite a basic human need as well.
What's a basic human need?
Just being able to wear what you want and to express yourself how you want without being judged or feeling like you can't.
So would you think that if we live in a future where clothing shops aren't separated by gender, and you have clothing in all sorts of cuts that mm-hmm. will suit all type of people, do you think that would free people up to be their real selves? Because they're not sort of having to dress in a certain, I don't want to say armor, because that sounds a bit loaded, but they're not having to dress with certain sort of expectations or something?
I mean, definitely. Like, for instance, as soon as you ask that question, I think about an event I had a couple months ago, and a guy came down after the event was over and was really interested in this one-piece jumpsuit. And I was like, yeah, that's so cool. Like, take it. It's free clothes. And he's like, no, I couldn't wear that. And I'm like, why? Like, it's not a gendered clothing item. You can totally wear a one-piece suit if you want, like a one-piece jumpsuit if you want. You could tell he was so into it. And he was really interested. Like, he actually quite liked it, mm-hmm. but felt sort of embarrassed, or, oh, yeah, like, can't do that in front of my friends, or couldn't wear that out, you know, in public. Who would think what?
Did it look a bit quote unquote feminine though, this jumpsuit? Or do you think, because I'm trying to get an idea of what held him back, because jumpsuit to me, I wouldn't place that in either the category.
I mean, it was just a yellow one piece,
okay,
with like a white ruffly collar, but I mean, you're asking the wrong person, because I feel like I can't bring myself to say this was like a feminine piece or like, okay.
But there was nothing overtly...
No.
Okay. Like, I don't know, yeah. Something that might overtly put it into one camp or another.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, but he just felt like...
Overwhelmed by the idea of having to wear it out in public, even though he really quite liked it. Like, he was really attached to the piece on the rack. So, it's interesting.
Did he change his mind by the end of the event?
No. Oh. No, he came down after the event, and he was just looking. We were packing away clothes, and he was taking a look at some of the clothing left behind. So,
and was he wistfully looking at the yellow jumps?
Well, yeah, and he was like, "Oh, guys, men can't wear those, and can they?" And I'm like, "Of course they can. Like, you just, yeah."
Has he been back to one of your events?
No, I haven't.
So
seen
we can
yet.
Call out for the man in the
yellow jumpsuit. If you're listening to this now, the yellow jumpsuit awaits.
I wonder why how we dress would be of anyone else's concern. Again, like with Laura, it was strange speaking to Santina, because she also just struck me as someone with a unique style and someone who is a real individual. I liked what Santina said about how if we can all dress how we want regardless of gender expectations, then we can just be whoever we want to be. It's interesting, as this appears to be a theme that is coming up on this podcast again and again. And sometimes it's subtle, and at other times it's more overt. The theme being about the ways in which people can figure out who they are and who they want to be, without the confines of gender roles and expectations from others, and perhaps even gender-related expectations from themselves. When Santina talked about wanting to wear boxers and also red lipstick, it was a sort of cool and strangely obvious moment, like, yes, why can't she? And why would anyone else have an issue with that? This is all making me think of the school children in Lewis who were questioning why girls and boys had to dress differently, and that the fact that they did that and got the school to change its dress code is really, really awesome. I wonder if it means that they will then have more years where they can decide who they are and who they want to be without the confines of how society expects them to dress, and therefore how society expects others to treat them according to that clothing. The question and thought I want to leave you with is this. I wonder that if by rejecting the way we're expected to dress according to how we were born, this opens us up to really exploring not only our gender identity, but who we want to be in the first place and how we want to live in the world. And that by really exploring who we are and who we want to be, not only will we feel more connected to ourselves, but we'll have more to offer the world as well. You heard from Laura Canaplu and Santina Sorrenti on this edition of The Gender Knot, where we explored whether clothing shapes gender identity. This episode was hosted by me, I'm Naz, and it was co-produced by Katie Vogue. Next week, we're going to have a short episode, and we're going to ask if gender is relevant to any of these discussions at all. So yeah, we're going to poke some holes into the entire premise of this podcast. I'm pretty excited about that. And the next full episode is in 2 weeks. That's on 25th September. We've got a few things cooking right now, so we'll surprise you with the topic for that one. Until then, you can find out more about us at our website. Head over to thegendernot.com. That's not with a K. You can check out episodes and transcripts and videos and find out more about us as well. We've been enjoying your emails and messages and have been getting some great ideas from them too. If you've thoughts, or if you want to suggest a topic, or if you want to be a guest, then drop us a line. That's thegendernot@gmail.com, or message us via our Facebook page. Please leave a review on iTunes. They take less than a minute and are super appreciated and help the podcast enormously. Okay, we're off to record some more. Speak to you next week. Take care until then.
Some brands offer you low finance or cashback or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cashback and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.